Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we hopefully are changing the way we think about and experience our world. And today is February 16th, 2018, and Happy New Year, Chinese New Year's today. So many things going on this week, but if you celebrate the Chinese New Year, I hope you have a good one. I mean, I always think it's something really fun to do, go have Chinese food and watch the dragon dances, etc. So, you know, and there was also an eclipse this week. We also had Valentine's Day this week. So on today's show, we will be discussing A Course in Miracles with web designer, writer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. Now, what Bruce and I have been doing over the past few months is we've been really focusing on the manual for teachers and specifically looking at what are the characteristics of God's teachers. However, because of this week, because it was Valentine's Day and special relationships, truly, I mean, they're important to all of us. And you might be sitting there going, okay, not to me. I don't care about that relationship. But you know what? We have special relationships with everybody and everything. In fact, right before the show started, I was telling Bruce, you know, he's going to be helping me with a website. And I go, I've got a special relationship with that damn website. You know, that's it. You know, everything in a sense is special. And we're going to talk about some of that meaning in terms of the course. But every relationship we have, whether it's with our home, whether it's with our backyard, our dogs, our car, or whatever it is, it's not just people. I mean, we kind of create this special relationship with every perception and with everything in our lives. So we're going to kind of hopefully talk about that and have some fun with that idea on today's show. So while you're tuning in, and thanks to everybody who's already here, I know there are people listening to us, but also I'm looking over on Facebook where we have a private group and I see people filing into the room, and I'm so thankful for that. Hi, Renee and Greg. Thanks for being here early today. So if you would like to go over and join us, it's not necessary, but if you want to join us over on Facebook, you can do that by going to our radio website, basically, 12radio.com. And when you go there, and by the way, I always like to direct people there because that's where you're going to get the schedule for all the shows. And we've got quite a few live shows here on 12 Radio. You're also going to get information about the various shows and the hosts. That's also where you can find the archives, or what we call the on-demand section, which holds about 6 months worth of previous shows. So if you're saying, you know what, I would really like to hear more of that person, or I want to hear that topic, I know I missed that show, you can go over to the on-demand section and listen to the shows, or you can even download them if you want them. And one of the other things you're going to see is you're going to see there's a button that says chat. So when you click that chat button, it automatically kind of transports you over to Facebook to a private group that we have where we answer questions or discuss things during our live shows. So if you'd like to join me over there, please go on over there. And Bruce and I will just be having this conversation, but you're welcome to chime in by putting a comment or a question over there on Facebook. And thanks to Scott Weaver, who is our producer today, because if he sees somebody knocking on the door who hasn't ever come in before, he's going to let you in. So thanks for doing that. And I see Tara. Hey, Tara, thanks for coming today and joining us there. So let's get Bruce on the line and let's start talking about special relationships. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, CA and all. And thanks as always for having me on your program. So,
well, thank you, because you know, I love these discussions and it keeps me on track.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. That's why I do it. I mean, you know, if it happens to benefit anyone else, so much the better. But I need the reminder. So that's why I'm always doing these kind of conversations. So, yeah.
Exactly. Well, and absolutely. And of course, everything that we do in our lives, I had told you, I've been working through the obstacles to peace, mm-hmm. which is a part of the text. But I'm working through it with Ken Wapnick and his book, The Journey Home.
Yes.
And I am... You know, I feel like I love it and I hate it at the same time, because of course some of it is like, really, really? But I do love it, and I look forward to it every single morning. And, you know, the other thing I think about sometimes with this radio show, especially making the decision to make it weekly, there is a part of me, okay, one more commitment, one more responsibility. But what's great about it is it keeps me in line. It keeps me on target because I love studying A Course in Miracles. I love, you know, just the opportunity to focus more of my attention. And doing the radio show every single week helps me do that, or at least hopefully. So I'm just loving it. And everything is so holistic, you know, or, you know, is a hologram. Because, of course, the minute I decided that, oh, we ought to be talking about special relationships and love this week on the show, all of a sudden, everything I'm reading is referring to that, mm-hmm. or at least it seems that way. And it's because it really is the basis of our curriculum. You know, in A Course in Miracles, you know, if you look at it in a very simple way, we think we separated from God. We believe that we're living in bodies and we're separated from God. So every relationship we have there, again, with a dog, with a person, with a home, with a vehicle, is somehow a representation of ourselves as an individual. And depending on what that perception is, really is whether or not we're able to access our own peace of mind and the love that I think we just naturally are. So it's been quite the ride. And, you know, and I also just want to say thanks to everybody who does come and listen to this show. And, you know, A Course in Miracles is not the pathway for many, many people. But if it is your pathway, thank you for joining us, because I have a good time with it. And I hope you will too. And I hope that you will just feel encouraged, maybe feel empowered, maybe just feel comforted and able to access your own peace of mind by some of these discussions that we have on Friday morning. So Bruce, one thing I'd like to ask you is, you mentioned when we had emailed back and forth about this would be our topic, you said, oh, I had a discussion with Susan Dugan earlier in the week, and you specifically were keying off of the text chapter 16. Uh-huh. And so I just thought, do you mind sharing some of that? And also telling people where you already have that posted so people can access that conversation, correct?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, I just posted it last night. It was a conversation I had with Susan Dugan, who I know you also have had numerous conversations with, as have I. And actually, Susan was my introduction to your work. So it's one big happy family, but you know, that's just a tiny microcosm of the total interconnectedness that we all share. And no matter who's listening to this and who they know and who they know knows and all on and on.
Right.
And on. So anyway, I posted the most recent conversation that Susan and I had yesterday on acimblog.com, and it should be toward the top of the page there. And it's basically the discussion about the section called The Illusion and the Reality of Love, which is from section 4 of chapter 16 in the text of A Course in Miracles. And, you know, I'll just If you will, I'll just pull out a few phrases and sentences from that section.
Yeah, absolutely. Because in fact, I pulled it up and I was reading it, and I thought, "Oh, this is really good."
Yeah, and there's so much there. I mean, we could talk for many, many weeks on this one topic because it's so all encompassing. As you pointed out in early remarks in this conversation, you know, we have a special relationship. It's not just romantic relationships or sexual ones or friends or coworkers or, you know, it's everyone and everything. And that was intentional, on the ego's part, when it basically fabricated this, A Course in Miracles refers to once in one of the workbook lessons as a double shield of oblivion. We, in order to escape from unconscious yet unfounded guilt in believing that we destroyed perfect oneness, we fled from the mind because the mind was now filled with the idea that duality was possible, and we actually took it seriously. We actually believed that was possible. And so as a result of that, we made up a whole world, that being the outer shield, the getting out of our mind being the inner shield. It's like, you know, don't go back into the mind, ego says, you know, don't want to go there.
Yeah, don't start really thinking about this.
That's a mean, nasty, ugly place, you know. As lesson 93 starts out, you know, you think you're the home of evil, darkness, and sin. Well, that's the whole premise of the ego that initiated and precipitated the idea that we needed to stay away from that mind stuff and to further amplify and solidify and defend an outer shield, if you will, of obliviating our awareness, we made up a whole universe. But the beauty of it is because, as the Course points out, it may be foolproof from the ego's perspective within the dream, but what we really are isn't in the dream. And so we took with us an awareness that the Course in Miracles calls the Holy Spirit. It's also, you know, I think appropriate to refer to it as the Jesus figure in the A Course in Miracles. And it's not really a figure, it's really the voice within us, which I like to call our inner kindness teacher. And that's basically the strength that we do trust in, to tie into today's workbook lesson, that we really all have access to that awareness. So I think that the special relationships are just so rich because they really relate to how much investment we've made in this dream world and using that as an excuse to stay out of our mind, which is really ironically the only place where we're ever going to find peace. And you know, equally ironically, it's only by looking at those special relationships with everyone and everything and learning to forgive ourselves, first by bringing that back inside, realizing it's not about the other person or the other thing or the circumstance. It's always about a decision in my mind that I made to be separate, to feel that somehow I messed up, which that was one of the things I think that was pivotally important when I think on an intuitive level, when I first read the Course back in the mid-80s, and then later on about 11 years ago when I picked up Gary Renard's first book and just like, oh my gosh, it hadn't really occurred to me the depth of and the profundity of the idea that perfect awareness that we can call God or love or truth or, you know, all kinds of labels that really don't do justice to that ineffable awareness. That principle, that understanding, if it has been contaminated with duality, then we're all goners.
Mm-hmm.
And if God, as we think of God, is schizophrenic, then there is no hope. But the beauty of A Course in Miracles is it suggests that awareness has no acknowledgement of the duality of the dream. And if it did, you know, then it would be just as crazy as our ego minds are. So if we can remember that and realize that the specialness that we made as a substitute, and of course says it's a shabby substitute for the peace that's behind that substitute is never going to make us happy. It's never going to bring us the peace that we really want. And we have to look at as you mentioned, you know, Ken's wonderful book, The Journey Home, where it talks about the obstacles to peace. I'm really only partway through it the first time, and I'm reading very slowly and you know, a page or two at a time, but probably only about a third of the way through, but I'm loving it, and because it really reminds me that my ego hates it. Mm-hmm. but what I really am and what you really are and what everyone else truly is loves this, because it's like this is our way out. We have to look at all the special things that we've made big deals out of and just turn our interpretations over to our inner kindness teacher, to Holy Spirit, and say, hey, you know, I'm going to mess this up if I make it a big deal and make my peace contingent on whether, you know, the behavior of this person or this circumstance or the outcome of this election or the situation involving X, Y, and Z, as the, you know, the workbook lessons try to say, if I make anything that seems to be outside of me as a contingency on my peace of mind, then I'm asking for trouble. And the only part of me that can ask for trouble really is that insane schizophrenic ego that, of course, it's God, the little G God that the ego makes to it as a substitute for, you know, its special God, if you will, as a replacement, is a schizophrenic God that basically, you know, honors and it recognizes our individuality and makes a big deal out of the personal and instead of the transpersonal, and wants us to really get invested in and attached to the substitute that it made for us. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, it is.
But we have to look at it first for us to see the craziness. We have to use every single specific, which interestingly enough has the same root as special. We have to look at all the specifics of our lives, and each of us seem to have different specifics on the level of form, but on the level of the mind, on the level of content, the specifics really resolve if you follow it back to the same content in the mind, the same decision in the mind to believe that separation was possible. And of Course in Miracles is always, and our beloved teacher Ken Wapnick always points out, it's not evil, sinful, or wicked. It's just silly. It's just It's just hilarious intentional misinterpretation that doesn't do anyone any good. And we don't need to feel bad about it. We just need to say, oh, look, I was afraid of love, just like a little kid, you know, an immature awareness that has so far removed itself from its true majesty and strength and understanding that it believes that it's at the mercy of a dream that it made. And how crazy is that? But that's our normal everyday awareness, isn't it? I mean, in this world. So we just have to kind of look at that gently, lovingly, patiently, forgivingly, and say, you know, every time I invest in that specialness, I'm asking to be miserable. Why would I do that? What was I thinking? For example, in the second paragraph on page 337 in the text, if people have this handy, this is in the section, The Illusion and the Reality of Love, it says, the symbols of hate against the symbols of love play out a conflict that does not exist. For symbols stand for something else, and the symbol of love is without meaning if love is everything. You will go through this last undoing quite unharmed and will at last emerge as yourself. Meaning that if we look at our special relationships with everyone and everything, and without condemning ourselves, without beating ourselves up and saying, oh, well, you dummy, why did you do that again? but just, you know, kind of look at it, and that helps us release it. Then, you know, what is really beyond the special love and the special hate, which is the flip side of the same ego, you know, zero value coin, is really the real love that is what we're, as, you know, trembling infants afraid of. You know, we need to develop that trust, and as we've talked about in previous conversations, and you know, return to the awareness that we never left by practicing moment to moment, looking at all the things we've made special and big deals out of, and more and less important. And which, again, this is a very holographic principle, as you touched on earlier, because everything is connected to everything else, and so. No matter what we look at, if we can forgive one thing, and learn to generalize that, which we do by normal way practice it, we're really forgiving the entirety of the creation in our mind that we've misunderstood and you know, made little shabby substitutes, which we call people and places and things, in a world that's a planet that's spinning around a kind of an obscure star out in the outskirts of an average galaxy, you know, and that's how we think of ourselves, right? I mean, even in a cosmic sense, it's things. But anyway, it goes on to say, this last step in the readiness, this is the last step in the readiness for God. Be not unwilling now. You are too near, and you will cross the bridge in perfect safety, translated quietly from war to peace. For the illusion of love will never satisfy, but its reality, which awaits you on the other side, will give you everything. So ironically, all the seemingly separate things and the seemingly separate people in which we invest so much of our hopes and dreams and expectations in, and, you know, knowing full well that expectations are cosmic setup for disappointment.
Right.
If we just kind of look at all the things we expect out of, our family members, our coworkers, our governments, our, you know, yada yada, it goes on and on. and it's just basically saying, as long as I make my peace contingent on the outcomes of any of those things, I'm just asking for trouble, aren't I?
Right.
So anyway.
Well, and you know what? I would love to read the second paragraph if you're finished with, or the next paragraph if you
are
finished.
Do. Please,
okay.
Sure.
Because to me, this is just, it's so perfect. The special love relationship is an attempt to limit the destructive effects of hate by finding a haven in the storm of guilt. It makes no attempt to rise above the storm into the sunlight. On the contrary, it emphasizes the guilt outside the haven by attempting to build barricades against it and keep within them. The special love relationship is not perceived as a value in itself, but as a place of safety from which hatred is split off and kept apart. The special love partner is acceptable only as long as he serves this purpose. Hatred can enter and indeed is welcome in some aspects of the relationship, but it is still held together by the illusion of love. If the illusion goes, the relationship is broken or becomes unsatisfying on the grounds of disillusionment. And the reason I say that is so perfect is because, you know, it kind of goes back to we're always trying to treat the symptoms instead of the cause. So instead of really looking and saying, okay, what is this storm of guilt about? We're looking for a rowboat. We're looking for the life jacket. We're looking for something. and sometimes until that's it, we try to find safety and security in a relationship. If I can find the perfect car, the perfect home, the perfect dog, the perfect person, the perfect mate, the soulmate, the twin flame, if only I can get that, then somehow I'm going to be safe. But of course, only as long as that person serves the purpose, or the home serves the purpose, or the pet loves me or does whatever I want it to do. Yep. And so, you know, I just feel like we're always like bouncing around and we're always like on quicksand, because when is that person going to let us down? When is the roof going to fly off that home, you know, or whatever it is? And so this is one of those things I laugh because it's like, oh my God, that's exactly what we're doing. It doesn't occur to us to challenge the idea of guilt. It doesn't occur to us to challenge the idea that we're not safe in the first place. We keep looking, and that's what the ego thought system is. When we use ego in terms of the course, we are choosing a system that says whatever your eyes show you is reality. You know, you've made up this world, you've made up this perception, and it's real, and you're guilty, and you're sinful, and you're scared, and you should be. And so, but if you can find this person, if you can find this relationship, this specialness, somehow you're going to be safe. And yet we all know we're not. Right? I mean, and we're always afraid. You know that old expression, when the shoe drops, when the other shoe drops. We're always afraid of that. And so I think this particular paragraph just speaks to that so clearly, that why are we not just challenging the storm that we're in? Why don't we want to just go into the sunlight and quit looking for, you know, this safety net? Because in truth, we don't need the safety net.
Exactly.
You know, we're not in trouble, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. And that's because we don't want, or I should say our egos don't want to be in truth. Because our egos, in an insane, if we look at it, you know, from a point of sanity, which is what our inner kindness teacher suggests, which is really the only true relationship we'll ever have, is with that awareness that we took with us into the dream to lead us back out. If we look with that sanity, at the insanity of ego's strategy of always trying to find peace where it can never be found, then we can see, you know, before the sword of Damocles or the Monty Python foot, you know, starts coming down from the sky, we can say, hey, you know, maybe I can try a different approach this time. There must be a better way, as Helen and Bill said to each other. You know, and so if we can remember that early on when we start going down that mental path, we can say, ah, got it. And maybe we, you know, instead of, you know, ruminating for an hour with something that doesn't work, a special relationship with a technology or a job or a mate or a you know, health regimen or, you know, whatever we think is going to do us, you know, right by practicing or investing in some external approach. If we can just look at that and say, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing the things in the world that I think are going to be helpful. But if I can remove my investment in happiness and peace from the outcome of those things, that lets everyone, including me, off the hook. Because I'm beginning to realize, as we say this, that my real identity has nothing to do with the seemingly separate self that I think I am. And we're actually reinvesting in those moments in the real identity that we all share, which I think is why shared interests are so important, and yes, how we actually turn around these special relationships that are designed to obscure and to conceal and to hide the guilt that truly is unfounded. But it's unconscious until we look at it. And I think that's why A Course in Miracles emphasizes relationships over and over and over again, because it's our relationship. You know, certainly the poster children are special relationships, love and hate, with life partners, family members, people we work with. Certainly, you know, the ones that we have the most interactions with are rich with opportunities to look at our own projections, see how we've invested those people and situations and circumstances with you know, ticking time bombs, if you will, just designed to kind of lead us on and then disappoint. But that's the ego's bait and switch strategy. It basically says, as long as I can keep you from looking at the real cause of the unconscious guilt, I think I can delay this inevitable doom that I think is you know what I deserve. But we don't even look at the unconscious guilt through our relationships, then we never get to it. And I love how our beloved teacher Ken Wapnick, in quoting Freud, says, you know, that dreams are the royal road to the unconscious, and he expands that to include not just the nighttime dreams that Freud emphasized, but the daytime dreams that we call our waking life. And in those waking dreams, we have all these special relationships, don't we? And those then become the opportunity to reinterpret, or maybe even better yet, deinterpret ego's misinterpretation by just looking at, you know, what the ego suggests things are for, and using the course's workbook strategy. And instead, we can say, "Oh, I don't know what this is for." And we ask our inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit, say, "You tell me what this is for." And inevitably, the specifics are going to vary depending on the person and the circumstance. But the content is always going to be, this is for forgiveness. This is an opportunity to forgive myself for believing that it was possible for me to violate God's trust, for me to destroy perfect oneness, for me to somehow magically make up a world that reflects a decision in the mind that was a belief, a silly, tiny, mad idea belief that we could be apart from each other and from that oneness that we all share.
Mm-hmm. So. And, you know, a couple of ideas that I want to introduce here, and I guess mostly because, you know, I'm so obsessed right now with Ken's book, I will just admit, The Obstacles to Peace. It's something that for those of you who are studying the course, and maybe you've read that section of the text, you know, I think I am among the many who looked at that and said, what? I mean, what do you mean the obstacles to peace? And I have an attraction to guilt and an attraction to fear, an attraction to death. It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
What?
And then you get to the one and ultimately you have a fear of God or whatever. And I'm like, what? You know, I don't relate to this at all. And it's like, but I wanted to. I wanted to relate, but my mind was just screaming at me. You know, because this doesn't make any sense. And so, once again, what I'd say is be very, very careful not to take things out of context when you're reading A Course in Miracles.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not going to make logical sense to an ego that has designed this incredibly insane system that says, I have run away from home. I have run away from God, but the way I'm going to protect myself is to continually put all my efforts into making a grievance list and figuring out what you've done wrong. Because if I can do that, if I can keep pointing the finger at you, if I can make you guilty, then I must not be. But of course, the irony is the more we expend that kind of effort in looking for what somebody else is doing wrong, making them guilty, all it really does is reinforce that whole belief in ourselves. So it becomes this vicious circle or vicious cycle. And yet, like I said, you know, there's many times I'm reading something and my mind just screams. It just screams. It doesn't make sense. But in my heart, I go, oh, my God, that's exactly what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a victim. I'm a victim and I'm innocent. And if only, Bruce, you knew what happened to me, you know, and that you, you know, if only you knew what happened. And in fact, you know, I'm going to point this out, and I know this is an attack on its own, but it's one of those things. I mean, in some ways, I do just want to laugh. And here again, at the risk of offending somebody, I was watching the Olympics the other day, and Shaun White, the snowboarder, you know, got a gold. Uh-huh. And one of the first things I heard a commentator say is how all these people were kind of writing and texting and emailing the station because did you notice Shaun White let the flag touch the ground? And I was like, oh, my God, get a life. I mean, you know, it was like, I understand that the flag is a symbol to us. But once again, it's a symbol, you know, and
we are symbols.
Yes. And here we are in the midst of he is crying his eyes out. It was so interesting. He cried and cried and cried and cried. So here's this guy. What is he? 30 years old. And he's just crying for 10 minutes after he gets this gold, because in his particular dream, in his life, that was redemption after having really messed up in previous Olympics. But I'm thinking, you know, you don't have to like him. But of course, what comes on the TV is they bring up two things. He let the flag drop on the ground, and then a lawsuit that was against him in 2016. And I'm thinking, why are we talking about these things? Because we can't help ourselves. You know, in fact, I was kind of thinking, in fact, I might write a blog on this. It's the idea of a dog fight. You know, my dogs, for whatever reason, I guess they do, must reflect my energy. If they see a dog fight, if they see two dogs getting into it, they just can't help. They just have to run over there and join it. And I'm like,
isn't that like an old joke? Is this a private fighter? Can anyone join in?
Yes.
And exactly. That's part of the ego's maxim, you know?
Exactly. And I'm looking at my dogs going, you don't even know what's going on over there. Why do you care? But I feel like we do it. You know, we're like, oh, good, dog fight. Let's get in there. Let's jump on that. So I'm like, really, all these people are emailing and texting this TV station to complain that Shaun White let the flag drop on the ground. Uh-huh. And to me, that's what it was like. It's like, okay, all right. But, you know, I think we probably have some bigger issues here to worry about, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And whether or not the flag touched the ground.
Exactly. You know, it's funny you mentioned those, because I watched that sequence where he won the gold, and I was like, wow, what a great performance. And that half pipe, which I'd never – learning some of the jargon since I hadn't watched the Olympics much but before that. But anyway, it was interesting – you know, when both of those situations, the flag and then the harassment allegation or whatever it was, it's like no matter what it is, there's always, you know, these hungry dogs of fear, if you want to call
right.
them that,
right.
which is not dissing the species of dogs, because we're all, you know, canines in the negative sense of the word, in our ego struggles to try to defend a losing proposition. Because of that schizophrenia that we believe that somehow we're not worthy. We believe that we lost our innocence mm-hmm. in making up a dream of duality. And that's, I mean, it sounds very metaphysical, but that's really a very practical outcome when we realize that if we can just look at the guilt And as the course says, you know, of all your many causes of suffering, not once did you consider that you're guilt among them. Yeah, you know, I'm paraphrasing exactly. that as usual.
But, I know, but that is such a great statement.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost hilarious when you think of it. Well, yeah, let's look at everything but the real cause of the problem. And we do that with everything. I was thinking about yet another mass shooting, and it's like, of course we need to, you know, have something on the level of form that, you know, addresses and mitigates that. But the true problem is always ignored. Or almost always ignored, and that is the choice in the mind, and our willingness to project guilt and go after, whether it's physically or just mentally by condemnation, and making someone less than all of spirit, someone less than this pure awareness that includes everyone, and whenever we assess ourselves. Usually by making someone else special and in the special love-hate arena, we're basically evaluating ourselves as not being worthy of the peace that is our birthright. And at the same time that we, you know, deem it that neither is anyone else, you know, it's like, you know, I'm laughing thinking about a spoof on Bob Dylan that was done. I kind of when in the era where I was listening to Monty Python kind of things, and this guy comes up and tuning his guitar, you know, and these twangy sounds, and he says before he gets going on his song, he says, "I've suffered for my music, and now it's your turn." You know, but that's kind of the approach that the ego has is as long as the martyrdom and the victimhood is shared, you know, regardless of whether you're on the victim or the victimizer side of the coin, then the ego's apple cart is not upset. Mm-hmm. But the irony is that you know, we start with typically with special love and then become special hate when we see the chinks in the armor and the flaws and but that's intentional. And I came across a little wordplay the other day. Well, it's been a while now, I guess. But I was thinking, you know, the special love that we have with people and places and circumstances and whatever starts out as infatuation, but then over time it becomes insinuation.
Oh.
So, and then we start insinuating all sorts of things, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
But the insinuation really is basically saying, I'm not to blame, or to a tip of the hat, another tip of the hat to Ken Wapnick and one of his wondrous little sayings about, you know, when babies are born, if we could understand what they're really saying, you know, the first words out of the womb would be, it's not my fault.
That's right. It's not my fault.
It's always the projection of blame. And that's why we need these special, hate and love figures to populate our dream so that we don't look at our mind, so that we remain mindless. Mm-hmm. And of course, in Rickles is always and only about looking at the mind and looking at really the two choices that we have for either ego or Holy Spirit at any given moment. And it's really mm-hmm. that simple when we resolve, to look at it with that guidance, huh?
Mm-hmm. And it's, in fact, speaking of simple, I think I always like to go back to that because even when we throw around the word forgiveness, you know, I admit that still just kind of, it's an edgy word to me because, you know, my first thought is how do I do that? And why should I forgive you for doing something that really hurt me? You know, forgiveness is one of those concepts that we continually struggle to reinterpret, but simply, it's like what you just mentioned, sending out the dogs of fear. And one of the things the Course talks about is how in many, many ways, what we do by choosing the teacher of ego or choosing the teacher, the inner kindness teacher or source or Jesus or God or however you want to see it, is we choose very consciously, although actually I think we do it unconsciously, but we can choose it consciously, is saying, am I going to send out my messengers and ask them to look for things that people have done wrong, look for mm-hmm. guilt, look for attack, look for all these manifestations of the fact that I feel guilty and fearful, or am I going to consciously, literally set an intention and say, okay, today I am sending out messengers who are going to bring back to me reflections of love, mm-hmm. reflections of peace. And see, that's something simple that we can do. And does that really involve forgiveness? Yes, it does.
Absolutely.
Yeah, forgiving ourselves. But yet we wouldn't go, oh, that's forgiveness. But say, you know what? I am the home of peace. I am the home of love. And so today I'm going to send out messengers that literally bring back that reflection to me. And that process alone is simple, but could really help change our perception.
Exactly.
You know, and like once again, in this section of the text, chapter 16, it says, your task is not to seek for love, merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. And sometimes I do sort of in meditation or contemplation, I just think about that. If I can really picture myself and think about, okay, within my heart, somewhere within me, not physically, but within me, there is peace and there is love. And the only thing that keeps me from understanding that, from feeling that, from experiencing it is, and in fact, I kind of see it as I have these huge gates and I see myself kind of just thrown up against the gates, trying to hold them closed. You know, it's like, oh, you're not getting out of there. And that makes me laugh. That makes me smile at myself like, yeah, why won't you let that peace and that love just simply extend? Simply because in the section, you know, when they talk about the obstacles, they say love just flows right over them. Mm-hmm. Love just flows right past it, you know, and you almost see it just as, you know, that's it. It's almost like a flood or it's the ocean. It's an ocean coming up on the sand and just taking out the sand castles, whatever the footprints have been from the day before. It just flows over them because they're nothing. And, you know, that love and that peace isn't ever in another person. It's not outside ourselves. We're not going to build this huge sandcastle of peace and love. It's not going to happen because it's always in us and it's always, it needs to flow out of us and into our perception, into the world. Exactly. And so sometimes simple, to me at least, simple visualizations like that help.
Yeah.
Because I do see it as like, really, you're throwing yourself up against these gates and you can't hold it back.
As you're saying that, I was kind of flashing on something that has crossed my mind recently from a colleague who's a rogue Egyptologist who just passed, named John Anthony West, who I got to hear at the Menahouse Hotel in Giza, Egypt, and, you know, at the base of the Great Pyramid about a quarter century ago, which reminded me of another former neighbor in Northern California who was commissioned by Lawrence Berkeley Lab to basically, you know, sort of metaphorically x-ray the second pyramid next to the Great Pyramid to see if there were hidden chambers. And he devised a scheme, this was, you know, 30, 40 years ago, to use sort of an x-ray system with cosmic ray particles to measure the angle that they were coming in to see if there's any, you know, more of these particles getting through. To see if there was any hidden chambers. And turns out he didn't find any, but he did turn the device on its side and made an interesting silhouette of the Great Pyramid through hundreds of feet of solid rock using this technology way before what we think of as modern computer graphics. And he showed me this image and showed how there was this corona around the Great Pyramid, which I thought was kind of cool, you know, harnessing that energy. But more importantly, these particles stream through, depending on their frequency, through the Earth all the way out the other side if they're high enough frequency. And it was basically, it's sort of like a hot knife through butter, you know, on steroids. And and I was thinking, well, that's kind of a neat metaphor for an infinite frequency. Then there's nothing that can stop in the dream or the illusion. And this is not obviously with the Course in Miracles is not talking about anything electromagnetic when it refers to light, but it's kind of a neat metaphor that, you know, the higher the frequency, the more aligned we are, the more we learn to generalize that the strength that we're looking for is in that inner kindness teacher. The more we penetrate through the dream and what we are able to walk through what seem to be walls of solid rock and discover that there's nothing there. But I'm reflecting on one of the line, you know, three sentences toward the end of today's workbook lesson. For those who are doing the calendar lesson, there is a place in you where there is perfect peace. There's a place in you where nothing is impossible. There's a place in you where the strength of God abides. And I think that's what we're talking about, isn't it? Is mm-hmm. there's that this reservoir, an awareness that always is present if we want to tune into it, that has a simple solution to everything that seems to beset us, that seems to trouble our minds, and that is that we can forgive, not in the, you know, the your grandparents or your parents' forgiveness, so to speak, as Gary Renard's teachers would suggest, but in what the Course transforms as true forgiveness or quantum forgiveness, is really seeing that truly nothing happened to disturb that peace. Nothing could possibly have threatened the reality of what we are, that we all share. And so from that perspective, we can afford to relax. We can afford to calmly examine the contents of our mind and patiently return through looking at those special relationships with everyone and everything to that peace. And that's ironically, by being patient with ourselves, that's which, you know, tying into our previous conversations on the development of trust, we actually, you know, that perfect patience produces immediate results, doesn't it? That,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Well, and you know, the other visual that kind of popped into my mind, probably because I saw the movie about a month ago, is the movie, I think it was called Chocolat. And okay. Do you remember it? It was.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but basically, remember there was the guy who, I'm trying to think whether or not he wasn't a priest or a minister, but he was a government official, I guess.
Oh,
and
okay.
He kept influencing the church and the town and the people. You know, he was big into sacrifice. You know, it was a time of Lent and you're not supposed to be eating chocolate. You're not supposed to be having a good time. You're supposed to buy into the fearful God and all of this stuff. But of course, what happens is slowly each person in this village is kind of seduced by the chocolate shop, you know, and partially just because in a sense, a woman isn't pushing it. So if you kind of think of the chocolate as love, it's sort of like it's seductive enough, you know, and eventually you're going to kind of give into it because that's what it is. And so this whole ego concept, this insane belief system of we have to sacrifice and we have to do this and we have to do that, eventually we just get tired of the fight. And so towards the end of that movie, this guy who has fought her during the entire Lenten season, he finally, you see him, he's asleep in the window of her chocolate shop.
Because, I remember that scene,
he's like literally devoured and he's just sitting in the midst of all this chocolate and all these sweets. Yeah. But there again, what was so great is she comes along and she finds him as she's opening up the shop and she simply, you know, kind of gives him a little, it seems like a little, you know, towel or something and says, go clean yourself up. You know, there's a celebration at hand. And, you know, so it's not like, what are you doing in my window? It's just, because she got it. You know, it's like love, chocolate, good feelings, loving other people, feeling in community with other people is seductive. And you know what? We can just give up the fight. We don't have to judge it. We don't have to, you know, call the police in. We can just give in to it in a sense. And when I think of that scene, it kind of feels the same way, you know, and when we look at ourselves, how we fight, you know, we fight because we're going to control the body. We're going to control the relationship. We're going to control everything. Uh-huh. And it's like eventually we just have to give in. You know, we just have to say, God, this is really hard. And it would be much easier just to give in to the idea that we do have shared interests. We're all doing this together, and what that person wants may look different than what I want, but we all want the same thing. We want the chocolate. We want the love. We want to feel like we belong, and so let's just give in, you know?
Exactly. I think that metaphor could break down a little bit if we emphasize too much on the form of the chocolate, but I certainly get your point, and it really is we're all drawn inexorably to that love that's behind the special love and the special hate. Mm-hmm. And again, sometimes the special loves are more challenging because they have the appearance of what we want, but inevitably it's just like a kid with a Christmas toy, you know, usually within, you know, somewhere between 5 minutes and 5 hours, they're playing with the box because the toy is broken, and or they've just gotten bored with the toy and they're moved on to something else, you know. But I think that's, you know, the beauty of what we're talking about here is that the real love that we all want truly is really what we're simultaneously drawn to, and to the extent that we're still invested in an ego identity, terrified of. And it's okay to be patient with ourselves, which, like, you know, the inspector who, you know, eventually indulges and finds himself OD'd in the, in the chocolatier's window, you know, in this movie. You know, it, we just have to kind of be patient with ourselves as we go through making a big deal out of having or not having certain things, and, you know, our special relationships to substances, to pleasures and pains, you know, because we really, pleasure and pain as we understand them, are really, you know, just two sides of the same coin. They're this, a special love-hate relationship with a specific form, usually some aspect of a bodily awareness. And again, the body is neutral, just as the world is neutral. So it's really how we approach it. What teacher am I going to look at this with?
Yeah.
And if we learn to trust our inner kindness teacher to help us reinterpret and deinterpret ego's interpretation, misinterpretation, you know, then whether it's chocolate or a passionate love relationship or a job or a new car or a repair to a broken water pipe in the garage that we think is going to make us happy, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, none of the things that happen in the world or with our bodies become big deals. And we, you know, it's a gradual process, isn't it? Where we just, you know, as you know, being unwilling to settle for illusion in place of truth, that's where we look at those shabby substitutes, particularly the special love relationships, but also the special hate relationships that are shabby substitutes for the true completion, the true love, the true unchanging awareness that we took with us into the dream.
Okay. But, you know, for clarification, Bruce, chocolate is love.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Oh, okay. I mean, let's just be really clear here.
That is one
illusion I'm not letting go of.
There you go. Well, I'm not either, because I mean, there's not only the brownies that my wife made last night, but also the other ones that with a different recipe that our neighbors brought over when we all watched the Olympics together. So they're not. They may be going away soon, but they'll be replaced with other chocolates.
That's right. Yeah. Let's be clear. And I want to thank you for being on the show today. And also thank everybody in the chat room. And several people have posted about the movie. Jan says that was the mayor who was doing all of that. Elizabeth, thank you for posting the picture of the movie. So thanks for being here and for really participating with us today. And I am going to post in the chat room the blog for Bruce. And Bruce, do you have any announcements that you'd like to make before we close out the show today?
You know, just one, and that is, in addition to, you know, I always appreciate when people go to aciimblog.com, which you just mentioned. There's also a new website that is emerging for the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. It's going to be launching fairly soon, presumably around the end of the month, but, you know, give or take somewhat. I had the pleasure of talking with David Soler, who's working on this, who's Gloria Wapnick's son. And so it's a really nice looking site. And it's inspiring me to continue on with the work that I've been doing with lots of wonderful people on the Foundation for Inner Peace website, which is certainly to follow as well. So, you know, stay tuned for two new cool websites coming up soon. So,
okay. And what is his name? I don't think I've ever heard of
David Soler. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name right. But anyway, he and another fellow have been working around the clock for about 8 months putting a new site together for the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And I was fortunate to hear the last streaming workshop that Jeff and Rosemary did from Temecula. And they're toward the end of the year, they're going to be moving the headquarters from there to Henderson, Nevada, near Las Vegas.
They are?
Yeah. So
The whole Temecula Foundation for A Course in Miracles.
Well, I'm not sure how much, but certainly the core of it will be there, and they're continuing on and starting with a new website, I'm hoping, and it's probably a lot of other people are, that they will continue to, in some form or another, resume the wonderful programming that they've been doing for the last few years after Ken's passing.
And
I think they've gloriously picked up, you know, where he left off, and obviously not a replacement for Ken, but the quality and the caliber of the work they've done is just wonderful. And, so, you know, I encourage people to go there. The site may be down temporarily until they put the new one up in a few weeks. But anyway, it'll be worth waiting for, I think. And so anyway, just.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. And I did post your blog, and I posted the Foundation for A Course in Miracles website in the chat room. So those of you who are there have it, or if you want to go over there later because you're listening to this, that's where you can find it. But the foundation is www.FAcim.org. And Bruce, thank you so much. Scott Weaver,
likewise.
Thank you so much for being our producer today. And thanks to everybody in the chat room and who, you know, everybody who's listening to this. I hope you have a fantastic week. For now, please stay tuned because we've got a lot of live programming coming up here on 1-2 Radio. And until next week, relax and wear loose clothes and eat plenty of chocolate. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest Bruce Rawls on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.